Today's episode of Tech Talks on the Unsettled Media Podcast Network is brought to you by Tech Impact, focused on unlocking prosperity by embracing technology. For more, head to techimpact.it.
Welcome back or welcome to Tech Talks. I'm your host and the CEO of Tech Impact, Kathy Simpson. We started this podcast in the fall of 2020, and this is episode 22. That's a lot of conversations about the power of technology to create change and to assist as our economy recovers and redefines itself through this pandemic. I appreciate you tuning in, downloading our episodes, and sharing it with others. Every episode is a learning experience for me, hopefully you too, and I'm excited to share this episode with you. Today, we're talking about change management. This is a fascinating topic. The reason I wanted to talk about change management is because it's so important for digital transformational projects. As you know, we've been managing the Digital Boost program here in New Brunswick, sponsored by ACOA and OMB. Through their financial support, we have 26 projects underway or recently completed that are enabling new digital capabilities in New Brunswick businesses as they look to the future. That's a lot of change for these digital boost companies. We often think that technology is the solution to solve all our business problems. You put in a new software upgrade or system, and that gets you going in the right direction. Well, that's not always the case. Technology is one piece of digital transformation, and there are other important components. Today, we're going to dive into one of the pieces that are so important for digital projects to be successful, and that's change management, the ability to manage through the change brought on by new technology. My guest is Nicole Paquette. She is a senior change management consultant with Mariner and has been doing change management for over 20 years. She fell in love with it in university, if you can believe it. You will be able to tell after you listen to her during this episode that she loves doing this work. Make no mistake about that. You're going to get lots of great advice you can take with you from this episode. So let's dive in. So Nicole, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about who you are, where you went to school, where do you live, kind of where's home for you?
Sure. Well, I live in New Brunswick now, and I grew up in New Brunswick, right in St. John. When I finished high school, I was very eager to see other things. So I packed my bags and I went to Ottawa, and I did a few things. I tried my hand in sciences and tried a few different things before I landed at the University of Ottawa in their commerce program. And so I graduated from the University of Ottawa in the late 90s. From there, I started directly with a firm called Accenture. So they are a global management consulting firm. And so I was very excited to start my career with them in change management. I did a lot of work out on the West Coast, and I ended up transferring out to the Vancouver office. And I had my first two children in Vancouver. And we lived there for about 6 years or so. And as I like to say, we had this crazy dream of having a house with a yard in a safe neighborhood for our children to grow up in. So we decided to pack our bags and move back to New Brunswick where we could be closer to my family and obviously get that house with a yard. So because Accenture didn't operate in Atlantic Canada at that time in consulting, I ended up moving to Deloitte. And I continued my career in consulting. It was in their human capital practice. And I was doing a lot of travel around Atlantic Canada. So that wasn't really working out for me with two small children. And I decided to work on my own. And from there, I had two more children. So now I'm four children.
Up to four.
Yeah, I've got four children all here in New Brunswick. And over the years, I've, you know, always worked mostly in consulting. I decided to slow things down when I became a single mom of four, and I took an internal role with Irving Oil locally. But I just missed consulting too much. I missed kind of working with clients and having that variety. So my first kind of step back into consulting was with another wonderful firm with a lot of great people, EY. And again, I was traveling quite a bit from Newfoundland, Halifax, mostly in Atlantic, but really, as I always like to say, if you're away from home, you know, you're away from home.
So,
so I ended up having quite a few conversations. I heard great things about Mariner, and this was about, you know, a year and a half ago or so. And I was really excited about what I heard, and I made the switch and have never looked back.
And so, right now, we've got a campaign going on about people with careers or jobs, letting them know that our doors are open. We'd love for you to come. So it's neat that you spent a little bit of time away, but New Brunswick was calling you home.
Yes. Yeah, it really, I kind of thought I always would. And it turns out, you know, I was away for about 17 years before moving back, but I thought I would move back, and I love it. I'm so happy to be here and to see the difference in St. John, you know, from when I was here growing up, you know, in the 80s. It's really a wonderful place to be, and it's a wonderful place to raise children.
So I know quite a few people at Mariner because there's quite a few people who used to work at MBTEL.
That's right.
And then way back in the day when we started Propel, it was called Propel SJ. Mm-hmm. And then it became Propel ICT. But people like Curtis Howe and the late Paul O'Hara and Bob Jessison were all involved in that. So it's always been fun to connect with all of my pals from MBTEL. So tell us a little bit about Mariner. Many people may not know the full scope of what Mariner is all about.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about the full scope of Mariner. And so Mariner was founded, as you mentioned, by Curtis and Jerry Pond and Bob Justison. I think it was around 13 years ago. And they really were focused on having a New Brunswick-based, Atlantic-based organization. And there are a few different umbrellas within kind of the Mariner partner kind of umbrella of companies. I work specifically for Mariner Innovations, which is the IT consulting side. There's a whole product side of the business, as well as investment in local startups. So, you know, there's a lot of passion behind a lot of every part of the company. And that's really what I loved about the idea of coming to Mariner. So all of these really energetic folks, as you mentioned, and there's been so much growth. So now we're up to over 200 people. We've got offices in St. John and Fredericton and Halifax, but we have people, we serve clients across Canada as far out, I think, as Alberta and into the U.S. as well. And we deliver training through our change management practice as well globally. And so we have quite a reach, and we're building our brand. And the focus now is really around you know, creating a best-in-class employee experience as the company grows, you know, kind of more strategically, I guess. And so there have been a lot of new practices brought in, and change management is one of those.
And you had a good 2020 because Paul Eisner is part of our Tech Impact executive team, and he said 2020 was a very busy year for you.
Yes, you know, I don't think we were expecting it to be quite so successful, but yeah, Paul has been very pleased, and rightly so. And you know what's really wonderful about this company is that, you know, there are many different parts, as I mentioned. And, you know, it really provided an opportunity to share resources, to share knowledge, and to pivot. And I was so impressed with the leadership team. You know, when all of this started over a year ago, there was a lot of transparency, there was a call to action, and, you know, people really wanted to step in and step up to do the right thing. And that's, I think, the beauty about, you know, having really experienced people who are Atlantic Canadians, because we do like to come together and serve a purpose. And I think that was a big reason why 2020 was so successful.
So as I mentioned in our intro, today we're talking about change management, and it's pretty rare to see someone who has worked in change management as long as you have. I mean, nearly since the beginning of your career, mm-hmm. you've always been touching change management. That yes. doesn't always happen. So either you just got yourself into a place that you love or you're crazy.
I think maybe both.
Maybe both, a sucker for punishment.
Depending on who you talk to, Kathy.
So why don't we first talk about what the heck is change management, and then we'll talk about what work do you do mm-hmm. in this space, because I think it's a highly underrated space, and many of our listeners will not know a lot about it. So why don't you yes. give us your definition?
Yes. So thank you for asking that question, because especially I think in the IT industry, a lot of people think, oh, change management, really what we're talking about is IT change management, the process around, you know, making sure that your releases are managed.
Yes.
And so what we're really talking about, there are many different kind of names. There's been an evolution, I'd say, over the last 20 plus years since I've been working in change management. I've heard people change management, organization change management. I've heard organization change readiness. Essentially, what we're talking about is ensuring that the organization's people, processes, and technology are all lined up and ready to, you know, flip the switch and execute on whatever the change is that is happening. It could be a new IT system. It could be a big office move. It could be pivoting, you know, from a global pandemic. And really the practice of change management, the way that we like to talk to our clients and, you know, with our colleagues about is it's about risk management. And so what we do early on in a project life cycle, and so if it is an IT, a big IT system implementation, we do a lot of work in assessing, you know, the organization, the workforce, the current state. And so that's really the environment that the change is going to happen in. And every change is going to feel different depending on the organization and the people and the culture. And so that's really kind of where the magic happens. And that's the work that we do based on our experience, you know, working in many different clients and many different kinds of changes. We say, okay, what's the plan? You know, what are we planning on implementing? How does that tie to the organization's strategy? So why are we even doing this? And let's get clear on that so that we can help leaders and help the organization be equipped to move through this change. So ultimately, they get the business results that they're looking for. And so often early on, we'll see a lot of different risks. We'll highlight potential risks, maybe on the rollout plan or, you know, how people need additional capability development. You know, are leaders prepared? Do we tend to communicate with our folks? So we tend to highlight a lot of risks at the beginning of a project, which can sometimes feel to our project managers like we're, you know, slowing things down. But it's really also that we can put the right mitigation strategies in place in order to get those business results sooner and to a greater degree.
You mean it's a little bit more than a training plan?
Oh, my goodness, it is.
I bet you've heard that more than once in the last 20 years.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, we talk about that a lot because often we do get brought in too late, like right before a go live. And there is a misunderstanding. And so I get, you know, Nicole, can you just throw together some communications and get people trained? And obviously, all of those activities need to be tailored based on the organization, based on, you know, their capability profile, you know, the different personas in an organization. What are the, you know, what is the demographic profile? What's the geography we're dealing with? So all of the strategies and approaches really need to be tailored so that your risk of, you know, getting to those business results doesn't get in the way.
I know I've spent 15 years as an IT consultant, and I would hear often, oh, Kathy, come in with a great communications plan. You're really good at that. Or, you know, let's put a little bit more money in the training plan to make sure everyone gets trained. And particularly in the IT field, and this is a podcast called Tech Talk, so we'll spend more time talking about IT here today. People tend to think we just need to know how to use the software or just need to know how the process works. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to see the bigger picture. I was part of it, and I'm sure there were proposals that I put out where I underestimated that because the customer wasn't buying it. Do you, do you run into that?
Yes.
They didn't see it as important.
Yes. Yes. And I think often it's because there is this misconception. I talk to clients and our training participants about this a lot. And I say, really, change management and, you know, people strategy and leadership, it's not about being nice. And we, I think, the common perception out there is that, you know, preparing our people is a nice to have because it'll make them feel good. And that's not what it's about. So we look at it from, you know, a capability building perspective, and we look at it, you know, what are the different things that we're expecting people to do? Are we expecting them to speak differently with our clients? And we need to be able to prepare them so that, you know, the dip in productivity after we change things is as small as we can get it. And we can get those benefits that we were talking about as soon as possible. So that's really where the business case is for change management. And it is a risk, like I said, it's a risk mitigation strategy, which makes it difficult when we're talking about, you know, putting a dollar sign on it, because it's really looking back at the failed change and the additional work that often has to be done after a system, you know, either isn't designed to the work processes or your work processes aren't, you know, kind of shifted and people aren't prepared enough to work differently. That's where we lose all the money. But often, you know, we don't really think about that enough up front.
So if you're thinking about an IT project and we're bringing a component of that to be focused around change, how do you get involved in these projects? What does that work look like?
Well, ideally, we would be involved, and that is part of, you know, what we're trying to do at Mariner, and I think what a lot of other successful firms have done, where we partner and we look at, you know, how do we come in and deliver value to our clients through an integrated approach between project management and change management. And so it's really when things are done well on an IT project, it's when you have that partnership in place, because we are all looking for, you know, the same outcomes. And so when we come in, we would kind of say, okay, well, what's the lay of the land in terms of, like I said, the organization culture, but it is taking it from a business perspective. And so my experience is that often with IT projects, they might be sponsored maybe by the CIO, but really what we need to get to is, what is this system enabling us to do? So that's that alignment to strategy that I was talking about. So if you're trying to get better information, better customer insights, whatever that happens to be, we need to always tie it back to that business case. And so part of what we do is to help shape that, you know, I hesitate to say story, but it's not a story. It's, yes, it's the truth of it, right? So yes, we help to shape the business case in a different way. And we really prepare the senior leaders to be able to talk about these IT projects, not as IT projects, but as key business enablers. And that's where it starts. So then when we think about it that way, we're starting off on the right foot, and we can start to then think, okay, are we going to be asking our employees to maybe use data in a different way, to interact with technology in a different way? And how might we prepare them and build their capability in order to do that, given where they are today? And so if we can always tie it back to the business, then we're going to be much better off.
It feels like you spend time helping to coach the senior leaders and business owners so that they're establishing their right rapport with, yes, those who are being impacted by change. Is that a decent assessment?
That is, you know, where we ideally like to start, because I mean, there are so many studies and stats out there around the correlation between strong sponsor behavior and successful projects. And it's not surprising to me, because everything really starts with leader behavior. But I think it's surprising to some who don't truly understand the importance of ensuring that the most senior leaders are talking about the strategic projects just as that, as strategic projects, and not as some IT solution. The other piece that we like to be involved with early on is helping to define, you know, how do we measure success?
Yes.
And so that's where true alignment happens. We're often, you know, we talk about leadership alignment as one of the first steps in the change process. And most leaders will tell us, well, we're aligned. We know we need this system. And then we dig a little deeper and we say, okay, well, what are the measures that have told you that you need to do something? And are you all looking at the same thing? And how do you know that we've achieved success? And who's actually going to measure that at the end of the day? So when you think about a project life cycle, you think, okay, we have a business case, we do the work, we go live, and often everybody leaves at go live, right? Yeah. And there is no way that those success metrics are showing what the business case did at that point, and they shouldn't. And that's part of what we do as well, is to really, you know, set the expectation that the dip in performance will happen. And so when you dip, let's understand and be really clear about how much is acceptable. And we can measure that right after go live. And then we know, what else do we need to do? Because the change is really only just starting for individuals then. That whole change process starts before go live, happens at go live, but it continues. And where the real value is how successful are we in bringing people from that dip in performance the smooth ride up to meeting the business case outcomes that were projected. And more often than not, we don't put the resources in place to kind of think about that, you know, post-go live and sustainability effort, which that change process is always happening after go live.
I can see how that happens because we often measure success by was the project on time? Was it on budget? Did we get everything in that we said? So the scope was exactly as we said
right.
And it's working. Okay, we did it, you know.
Right, versus- and that's right. And that's what we measure success on. And so what we like to do, and I have a dream, and my dream is that we would actually celebrate success, not just at Go Live, because Go Live is important. There's a lot of effort. But how about we have that big celebration when we meet the business case outcomes? And what would that do to supporting the change process? Because that's really the whole point of the project. You know, it's not about flipping the switch. It's about making sure that your people are doing, you know, using this fancy new system that maybe was sold to you and with all the bells and whistles. But what we often find, you know, when you actually do the metrics after the fact and you look at the performance, people don't always know how to use the system to its full capacity. And so you don't get the benefits.
So 2020 has been an extraordinary year and we're still in the midst of the pandemic with hope, much more hope than we had even 3 months ago. But 2020 saw this massive disruption to the way we do work. And so we have digital transformation happening at a rate that may have taken us a decade to achieve. And my, that's really scary for a lot of people because it's survival. And it may be introducing change to an organization that's not ready for it and haven't prepared for it. So, you know, a consulting company may come in and help get an ERP up and running. And then it's, wow, this is a lot of change. How am I going to maintain it? So just two pieces of a question here. The first is, how do you help in your change management practice to get through that vulnerability and that fear of change? Because that does seem often at the heart. And two, how do you get senior leaders aligned? Because sometimes everyone's not aligned, and that can often be the root of real challenges. So how do you work through those scenarios?
Well, I think I'd like to answer your second question first, because it actually starts there. Because without that leader alignment, it's very difficult to support individuals through their discomfort. And, you know, what we talk a lot about in our with our clients and in our training programs is that leaders have to go through a change process too. So there's a lot of, like I said, you know, there's a lot of literature out there around the importance of the leader and the leader's role in driving successful change. But we sometimes expect individuals who are in leader roles to just be able to go through it, right? And they have to also be supported. And so the alignment process is the beginning of that support. And it's usually really uncomfortable.
Yes. So you get involved in lots of that.
Yes. And so it's what we often do, because we do, as I mentioned earlier, I hear we're aligned. We've got this. And so what we do is say, okay, that's great. Let's talk about how you're going to communicate this and what the words are that you're going to say. And are you comfortable with your direct report saying these words as well? And so that's where we get into it. which usually, you know, we can get agreement on the initial discussion around, okay, we're going to prepare you in your role to, you know, lead this and communicate. And so we talk about, you know, what is the case for change? Like, why are we doing this? And how does it support our strategy? Those are some of the key messages. We talk about the vision, which is, how do you know that you achieve success? So how are we going to measure this? And we talk about, and how are we going to get there? So what are the steps? And kind of at a very high level, these are the areas that we're going to focus on. And we will support you through this process. So I would say, you know, more often than not, when we get into the nitty gritty of, you know, putting the words out there, things like, we use this example a lot, timely data. So we ask people, well, what does timely data mean to you? If you had to write down on a sticky, is that, you know, immediate? Is it within 3 hours? Is it within 24 hours? And there are often variations on what timely means. You could have the same thing around, you know, whatever the outcome is you're looking for, as granular as we can get on, you know, specifics. That's when people start to feel very uncomfortable. And that's okay, because you can't have any change without discomfort, which is why change is so hard. So we need to be able to support our leaders through this process. And that's usually how that alignment process evolves. It looks a little bit different each time, which is why it's really important. You know, you kind of have the support of somebody who's got a lot of experience with different kinds of projects. So you can kind of hone in on, you know, use that sixth sense of, you know, what's going to cause some questions to be asked out in the organization that you really want to be clear on, particularly when, you know, there may be job losses. Like, what are you going to say about that? And so you do get that alignment through that process, which then, if we can get that alignment and continue, we tend to, you know, it's never a one and done with alignment. We always have to continue to check in and really support the sponsors and the leaders by partnering with them and coaching with them and creating their own action plans and kind of leader plans as they go. So there is a coaching role there. But by doing that, that then helps individuals because
the rest of the organization deal with the change.
And often many change programs won't provide or just kind of like gloss over the level of support that managers. So I just call all, whether they're supervisors, managers, senior leaders, they're all people leaders. So all people leaders should be kind of, you know, looked at as it's a slice of a stakeholder group. And we need to make sure that we provide support, data, communications, training, capability building to all of those people leaders so that they can go through the change process first, ask all of their questions, and they can then come back to their own teams. So again, there's lots of research out there that will say, and it's, you know, not surprising, but people want to hear about changes from their immediate supervisor, which is true, right? There is a role for the senior leaders and the sponsors to play in terms of aligning around strategy. They need to be visible and, you know, really be out there. Absolutely. But when push comes to shove, I know that, you know, let's say Mariner's going through a change. I want to hear from Paul. I want to hear from Curtis. But really, I want to talk to my people leader and say, so Shelley, give me the real deal here. Like, am I going to have to really pay attention to this? Is this important? And if that people leader isn't fully aware and isn't fully prepared and hasn't gone through the initial parts of the change process, her or himself, they will not be equipped to have a connected, meaningful conversation with their team. And that's where change happens.
So how do you get good at this? What kind of roles do you find in the change management practice? Because we always in the podcast want to help those listening who may be thinking, what's that role about? Is there a career in change management? I think I could do that. So tell me about some of those roles.
Yeah. So, I mean, there are change management consulting roles, both with firms, so like, you know, external client-facing roles. But what I'm finding, and one of the things that we support organizations with, is building an internal capability. So I'm seeing this a lot more now compared to, you know, 20 plus years ago. And this is really good for clients because, you know, you want to be able to leverage maybe, you know, external consultants to some degree, but having your own internal capability is critically important to build, you know, that capacity over time, and to build resilience of your leaders. So one of the things that, you know, we can do for clients is build that capability internally. And we are seeing that, like I said. So I'm noticing a lot more job postings for kind of more entry or intermediate level change management consulting roles. And there's always a need, you know, in consulting firms as well. You know, even within government organizations now, there's a lot more internal capability than there used to be. And that's really encouraging to see. And, you know, part of our mandate and what we do is try to build out capability in Atlantic Canada and increase the level of capability, not just for us, but across, you know, within our clients. And we even, you know, do a lot of work with competitors and help to build out. So we're doing some work to build out a local chapter of the Association for Change Management Professionals, which is directly partnering with a number of other firms. And so it's really important that we continue to kind of build capability, not just for our clients, but within our clients as well. So lots more opportunity than there used to be.
Are these roles often found in an HR department, or that might be a specialty role in a IT department, but you have a change manager who's part of these projects?
Yes.
So yes, so to both,
it's
probably
everywhere. Yeah. So I've seen so many variations, and it's one of the questions we get asked a lot. You know, where is the best place for change management? I've seen change management within kind of an organization development department within HR. I've seen change management within IT, and I've also seen separate change management offices that are kind of partnering with a project management office. So kind of more that strategic project portfolio management office for organizations that have that. I'm a little bit biased to that model because I feel like it allows for that better conversation around, you know, aligning to strategy and making sure that you're creating a portfolio within your organization of strategic change that then you can kind of look at in terms of, you know, your roadmap to execute on your strategy, rather than what often happens, you know, if they're in different parts of the organization, they, you know, it becomes an IT focus or a people focus. And really, like I was saying, it's a strategic enabler. And so by putting it kind of in a separate change management office, you can have those better conversations and support the leadership team in a more holistic way.
So help bust this myth. I can't be a change manager in IT because I don't know IT.
Oh, well, so the change process is the same, no matter what. And so your question around digital transformation or, you know, any specific IT project, over time, like I've worked in a number of different large system implementations. So you get to know different systems and kind of how they, you know, tend to get implemented. So all of that knowledge is very important, but the principles are the same. So you assess, say, okay, what is the change? What are you asking people to do differently? How does this align to your strategy? Are we all saying that this IT system is going to support the strategy in this way? And how do we then enable the organization to be able to pick this up and do what it needs to do to get the business results?
But you could be a change management consultant helping a company that's going now to a distributed workforce.
Yes. Yes.
And you're going to start with the senior leaders right at the
very beginning. It's the same process. Yeah. So our framework and what, you know, many of the, you know, more commonly known change management methodologies are all aligned to a global standard. And I mentioned it earlier through the Association for Change Management Professionals. And there is a standard for change management. And that's really kind of, you know, for clients looking for support, you would want to kind of make sure that you've got a change management practitioner who's aware of the global standards and who, you know, really understands that end-to-end process, because you can apply that to any scenario.
So it's very clear to me, and I'm sure to the listeners, that you are passionate about this topic. So you've worked in it, like you said, two decades.
Yes.
Tell us what makes you so passionate about change management and what has kept it as being the core of your life's work, really?
Yeah, it's kind of scary when you say it that way, Kathy. It's funny when I do my intros for our training programs and when I meet with clients, I just say, I've been doing this for over 20 years. And I am just always going to say over 20 years.
20 years.
Really, it's always going to be accurate, but it is a little scary when you kind of put it that way. I got the bug, I remember, in my fourth year university, and I took a course called Managing Change, and I just fell in love with this whole idea of, you know, being able to support the change process by really looking at the different levers, right? Because it's not, as I mentioned, it's not about being nice. It's about getting business results. And I was fortunate enough to work for a large firm that one of probably the you know, early days of change management. Like, I work with a lot of people who, you know, we would have started 20 years ago, but a lot of people didn't talk about change management. What I love about it is that, and it won't surprise you to hear that I love variety, and which is why, you know, even when I took an internal role, I loved the variety, but I love the challenge of applying these concepts in so many different situations. So, you know, I've worked on, you know, cloud systems, I've worked on large ERPs, you know, 20 plus years ago, which were not what they are today.
Yeah, a lot clunkier back then.
Yeah, I've done a lot of work in safety culture. I've done a lot of work in kind of overall kind of culture change. And it never gets boring. And that challenge of, you know, really supporting people through this process and helping people realize, I guess, that it's okay to feel uncomfortable and to sit in that and go through it and to trust the process. So I'm a big process person, which a lot of people are kind of surprised by because they think I'm a people person. But it's really the process that I'm in love with.
So let's talk about the skills, because we'll have youth at university listening to this saying, I like process. I like doing business analysis. What kind of skill sets do I need to work on to be able to look at a career in change management?
You know, it's interesting because people who are who have worked in change management a long time or who are kind of senior change management practitioners, it seems we've all gotten here through a different path. And so, you know, my path was through business and my specialization was human resources. But many people have a background in psychology. A lot of people, you know, adult learners or adult learning, that whole side of it, communications. But really when it comes down to it, there's the behaviors that really drive success, regardless of your background, because we are open to all kinds of different backgrounds. It actually helps us. But, you know, what it comes down to is something that I like to call interpersonal flexibility. Mm-hmm. You do need to have an appreciation for process, have a learning mindset,
yes,
and be okay making mistakes. Because there is not one way to do this. And I say this a lot, especially to kind of, you know, younger people or people I'm coaching. Every single time, I'm comfortable saying this now, maybe 10 years ago, I would have felt a little insecure saying it, but every single time I start a new project, I feel like I'm starting over, which is like gives me anxiety on one hand, but that's really what is the addictive factor to all of this. And I know that by going through the process, trusting the process, we will get there. And so that's why, you know, you need to have that appreciation for a framework, for process, and, you know, understanding a little bit about data, which is probably surprising to some people, but really those assessments, it's part of what differentiates our practice, I think, from a lot of other change management practitioners. We focus a lot on early assessments and on data and on measuring results, and bringing it always back to business. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's about individual behavior change that we're trying to instill. And so there is a, you know, a psychology component to that, absolutely. But we need to be able to measure it. And we need to be able to know for this particular culture where the ways of working are X, Y, and Z, our strategy needs to be a little bit different to be able to support the change process.
Can I graduate with my business degree and get a job in change management? Or is it something you need some experience? You can. Okay.
You can. It depends on the organization. And so what I would say is, If somebody is interested in, you know, starting up straight out of university, and that's what I did, but I worked for a big firm where the structure was in place, the coaching was baked in, you know, so I would encourage people to ask what kind of support they're going to get, because one of the worst things that can happen to a new consultant is that they get put into a situation and, you know, they're not equipped to deal with it. So it's important that we stretch, you know, as we go, but we also need support. And everybody does. I need support. And that is really the beauty of our practice. We now have, I think, 14 change management practitioners at Mariner, and we're very collaborative. So we're very open about saying, you know what, I'm having this issue. Have you ever dealt with that? And many of us are seasoned, but we rely very heavily on each other, which, you know, we love about, that's really what we love about working at Mariner.
Well, the magic that happens is you might have processes and templates for your work. So you're going in to meet with senior leaders and you have a set of questions that you're going to ask them, but something always comes up. And so you need to have that experience sometimes to be able to know how to make that happen. And you love consulting. And sometimes you just get exposed to so many different scenarios that it mm-hmm. enables you to grow in yes. so many different ways.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think change management for me and what I've taken from you, it's we often say this, it all starts at the top with the leadership team. It all starts at the beginning of when mm-hmm. you're looking to make changes to the organization. And I don't know how many times you said that, reinforced that message. And I think that's where projects go wrong. You know, you think someone is there, but they're not.
Yes.
So that's one. And the second thing I took from our conversation, too, is we tend to think that it's about the technology and the processes. But I thought it was really interesting about when your manager is the one who talks to you, that's when it really the rubber hits the road. So
yeah,
we can never underestimate the power of people.
Mm-hmm.
And how important that is in the change process so that they can feel like they can fail. They can feel yep. they can be vulnerable. They can say, this is scary stuff. I don't like
That's
this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do I work my way through it? And we tend to not spend as much time on that, do we?
You are right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I can't thank you enough for joining us and continue to do this great work at Mariner, because it is an essential part of digital transformation and evolving our businesses. And I'm really glad you got to help our listeners better understand this practice. So thank you, Nicole.
Thank you, Kathy. It's been a real pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed hearing from Nicole about change management. And I'm sure, like me, you got a really good sense of how much she enjoys doing this work. Change management is so important to digital transformation, and it's a significant priority for Tech Impact. Technology has proven time and time again to be an enabler of growth, productivity, and competitiveness. If technology is going to work, it needs to be accepted by those who are being impacted by the change. And to make that happen, you need change managers to help people along that process. At times, that can be really challenging, as Nicole mentioned, and it all starts with leadership alignment, business alignment, and a business case. I often think of change management as linked to project management, and Nicole talked about that during the show. I've been on projects where people have thought that if there is a project manager, they can handle the change aspects too, but that's not the case. It's that integrated approach that Nicole talked about that's required, and it starts with leadership at the most senior levels. Managing change is hard. We all know that. We don't like to change in our daily lives. We need people like Nicole who have the skills to navigate with senior leaders on building change plans and strategies that will manage the risk of change to any organization. We want your technology projects to be successful, so invest in change management. Thank you, Nicole, for sharing your passion for this topic and for providing insights into this work being done at Mariner, a long-standing Tech Impact member and growing IT company in Atlantic Canada. Look forward to talking to you soon.